painting to photography, from beadwork to woodworking. KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University presents Artbeat. Artbeat highlights the work and accomplishments of local artists from in and around Winona. Support for Artbeat is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Can you imagine writing about all those embarrassing and awkward moments in your life and publishing them into stories for the whole world to read? Today we visit a Minnesota author who has done just that. I'm Terry Tenseth, and you're listening to Artbeat. Good afternoon. You're listening to Artbeat. I have Minnesota author Peter Smith with me on the phone. Good afternoon.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing really well.
Good.
Really well.
Now, you wrote a book, A Cavalcade of Lesser Horrors, and before that, you wrote A Porch Sofa Almanac, Minnesota 2010, and you also are a regular contributor to Morning Edition on Minnesota Public Radio, so you kind of got a lot going on.
Guilty on all charges.
So. Well, let's start off in the beginning, if we shall. And first, I'll mention that you are going to be in town here in Winona, Minnesota at the Bookshelf for a wine event.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Fancy, right?
Yeah.
And that's on Wednesday, the 21st, which is tomorrow. You're going to kind of sit down and read some stuff and talk with people and answer FAQ while they sip on wine, right?
That sounds like fun to me.
I don't have a problem with that either.
Okay. That's right.
Okay.
I'll be there.
You're going to be reading from A Cavalcade of Lesser Horrors, correct?
Yes. I think I'll have both along, so I'll be able to kind of read little bits and pieces from each, but primarily I think the cavalcade will, you know.
Let me ask you a question about it. As I'm reading through this, and it's kind of like a memoir for you, right, of messy situations, of different things that have happened in your life that maybe weren't the most graceful thing for you or for others, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
How do you pick your top couple that go into the book?
I think it's whatever made me wince most recently.
Okay.
In terms of, these are the events that go all the way back to like early childhood, and they kind of come ricocheting back to, I think they come through everybody's life. Everybody has these, you know, messy situations that double back to haunt them later. I just kind of, in writing the book, just had a kind of an archive of these things and just started kind of, you know, knocking them off as they occurred to me. So.
Were there some that didn't make the book that you thought were going to originally?
I think there's at least three every day.
Okay.
Because I think that we all do experience these, and I think that part of writing is to just be kind of sensitive to or attuned to just those kind of moments. And so, yes, there are many that didn't make the book.
Well, kudos to you for actually writing about them.
Oh, thank you.
Let's go into your writing process, and how did you accomplish getting all these down on paper? Was it over a long period of time for you?
Well, in bits and snippets, probably about 5 years. You know, I think part of writing is to just kind of keep writing. So in between other projects, when I was just looking to kind of keep my skills sharp, I would reach back, grab a lesser horror and have at it and see what came of it. So I would guess maybe 5 years off and on, just kind of.
Casually, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Is your writing style normally very casual?
Well, it is, in that I try to keep kind of nimble and open-minded about it, but then again, it's not, because I try to spend at least 3 to 5 hours a day working at writing. It's casual, but it's also something I better do every day, or else I'm in big trouble with me.
Oh, okay. So you're your own boss, like you had mentioned in the book, now.
Yes. Yes, I am. I pretty much have got the commute down to from the kitchen to the office and back as needed for coffee.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Now, what some people might not know, and if they do pick up the book, they'll find out that you've kind of found yourself in the advertising industry.
Now the cat's out of the bag, Terry.
And that ties into, you had an English major, right? You majored in English.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
How is that different from going to writing a book to doing the advertising thing?
That's a very intriguing question. Different kinds of writing. I think advertising is a great discipline for getting things said very quickly, very short, for reducing something to its lowest common denominator. You know, in advertising, anything more than 30 seconds is might as well be War and Peace. Whereas with the kind of writing that you see in these two books, you have more opportunity to kind of expand or to look for details to kind of hang on that real concise story and kind of be maybe a little more generous with the reader in terms of adding, enhancing, building. I would say also at the same time you're doing that, you owe the reader, you can't just get florid with it or just start heaping details in there for the sake of making it longer. You have to maintain the precision of more concise writing, but you have the luxury of adding length to it, if that makes sense.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you were writing for a trailer, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
In some cases, in advertising, it's like writing in a trailer. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, just a bad joke.
Were there things that you really, really did enjoy about going back and forth between the two, or would you always stick to the longer essay type writing?
I have a kind of a love of this essay form. I've always enjoyed some of the great essayists, American essayists of the 20th century, just enjoyed and admired. People like E.B. White, who is truly a genius. He has such a wonderful voice for American English and such a wonderful way of telling a story that I really kind of gravitate toward that. It's the stuff that I can do best. Every once in a while, I'll, you know, wander over and try some straight fiction. I can do it well, but this seems to be where I was meant to do my writing, this essay kind of stuff.
Because you mentioned this about your dad being a news writer. Do you think that that came from him, the way you're able to put down words where people aren't grabbing the dictionary all the time?
To a certain extent, yes, very much. My dad wrote newspapers in Chicago, and you know, the mantra growing up, we had a memo from one of his editors, thumbtacked to the wall above the phone in the kitchen, and it was all about writing, and writing with short words, short sentences, short paragraphs, which is a real important lesson in writing, is clarity, clarity, clarity. And once you've mastered that, then some of the other stuff can come into play. So I think that basic journalism style is probably the first skill for a writer to install, and then build from there into maybe more elaborate forms and go. So I'll definitely say that I owe a lot to, as a writer, to journalism and to my dad, as that being the basic building block of any good writing.
Out of curiosity, did he get to see any of your stuff or make comment about it?
Yeah, he saw a little of it, not the stuff that's in either of these books, but it's funny because him being in newspapers, it was very, very direct. And I have always had this luxury of maybe a little whimsy to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he admired the ability to kind of write whimsically. It's a voice thing. And when you're writing newspapers, I think the whole trick underlying all that is to avoid having your voice kind of get between the reader and the story.
Right.
So we kind of were working parallel there for a while, but I had the luxury of being a wise guy, and he did not. So
maybe jealousy that he never even told you about, probably, with that.
Yeah. He was known to call me a wise guy from now, time to time, but that's a different story. So,
how did it come to be that you got involved with NPR?
Well, I, in this essay form and in writing advertising, I just have had for some time this knack to be able to write to kind of a radio length. NPR, there's no shortage of people volunteering to write essays for them, and they get plenty of those, but people are writing 8, 9, 10 minute essays, and there's a 3 minute window there. And so I was fortunate enough to come to them with the ability to write, thanks to all that advertising. It's 3 minutes to me. It's a wonderful length. Other people will have trouble reducing something to 3 minutes. So I just kind of lobbed a essay over their transom, and they liked it. We recorded it. I'm also fairly prolific, so I lobbed another and another and another, and then one day they took me to lunch and said, why don't we do this regularly? So, and I said, sure, because it's just a wonderful, I love radio. I think it's a wonderful medium, and so it's been going like that.
Good, and I bet you really enjoy that, too.
Yeah, it's fun. Their one ground rule was try to keep it about Minnesota.
Okay, yeah.
So I have got the entire state for my own personal playground, if you will, in terms of writing those little commentaries. It's wonderful.
But there's no vacation to Florida, is what you're saying.
No, so. I wouldn't say it's a... It's not a rocket to an upper income bracket, that's for sure. But it's fun.
Now, going back to the book a little bit, I mean, just to give people an idea so that maybe if they want to go ahead and pick it up, hopefully, or see mm-hmm. you at the bookshelf, you also talk about your time in Vietnam, which mm-hmm. I would think would be really hard to write about with so much grace and tact that you did. Was that hard revisiting that and putting it into a format that would be of a lesser horror?
I think it's not hard to revisit because I think it's always with you once you've been through something like that. It doesn't go away. And so it was more a matter of finding the right one or two little essays or points within that experience to talk about and to try to do it with some introspection, some grace, and not either overplay the, a lot of people went to Vietnam, and I don't think anyone is entitled to, overplay that role as Vietnam veteran. So mm-hmm. looking for the right kind of story to tell and the right tone to try and do it with some level of humility. And, of course, we now have the luxury of retrospective. It's been a while, so... It was not difficult. I think it was important to do it with some grace and some respect for the people involved in those.
I'm glad you took that approach with it. I was actually quite pleased with that when reading it. The thing that I found really intriguing was your little essay called The Amnesty Barrel. And I don't want to give too much away, but basically there's a place where you transition from being active and going home from the Vietnam War and what that's about and what it symbolizes and what this barrel symbolizes to you. That was really, really quite well written.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, the Amnesty Barrel is there for me forever. You know, it's one of these, we should tell people maybe a little. I don't mind. When you left Vietnam, you stood there and you looked out at the plane that was flying you home, and they gave you a list of things you couldn't bring back in the country. And then they pointed to this red 55-gallon drum and said, if you've got any of that stuff, you can go throw it in there, and no questions will be asked. So this whole idea of an amnesty barrel, they called it the amnesty barrel, a place where you could just go jettison, think of the images of things you might want to jettison that you couldn't,
and,
as well as things that, they just didn't want you bringing back into the country. So it's one of those images that I've been wrestling with for decades now, trying to figure out how to use it and not overuse it, not abuse it as a writer. So I hope I did it well. I'm glad you saw that in that.
Well, I did, and then I thought to myself, I must have a bucket somewhere, You know?
I think we all need amnesty barrels.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I think we do too.
whether it's coming home from a war or coming home from the grocery store. You know,
that part really, really hung with me. And then the fun story about you and your dad and a lawnmower repair and just, the relationship between father and son and how complicated that can be. And
especially when neither father nor son has any mechanical aptitude at all, and we're working on the family lawnmower. And that was a fun one. That was a fun one. I come from a family of nine, and all of them just kind of said, yeah, that was him. So
another thing the Midwest readers might be able to glom onto or appreciate too is you talk about being raised in a pretty staunch Catholic environment.
Yes.
Which I can relate to a certain degree as well.
Yeah, as one of nine kids, I think I refer to my parents as recidivist reproducers.
Yes.
You know, there was somebody new every 15 months, for a long time there, and it just got more and more crowded. I think there's two kinds of Catholicism. There's Catholicism, the religion, and Catholicism, the culture. And I think the culture of Catholicism is what I am most steeped in. And that's where most of these stories, the Catholic elements in there, the Catholic horrors, are more from the culture,
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I know my grandmother was rooted in that very much so for my mother's side. Father's side is Lutheran, but mother's side was.
Yeah. There's hope for you.
Yeah.
My wife's mother was Lutheran from South Dakota and married a Catholic, and they had to leave South Dakota because
of
such a scandal, But, that's the way it is, I'm afraid. We survived.
Yes.
I think we survived.
Do you have a website?
I have a blog.
Great.
And it's called petersmithwrites.blogspot.com. Is the web address.
Okay.
All one word. petersmithwrites.blogspot.com.
Blogspot's a great place.
It is. It's wonderful. So I just before you called, I threw up a little bit about an uncle of mine down in Chicago who used to take us ice skating on Christmas Day, late afternoon, right about as it got dark. It's wonderful. It's easy. It's nimble and easy to update. So
now, one last question: how would you compare your landscape? Like, do you really love living in Minnesota versus Chicago? I know you haven't been in Chicago, probably living for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think back to, as a creative resource, do you think back more to Minnesota necessarily than Chicago?
I think of myself as kind of a hybrid.
Okay.
When you think quintessentially Minnesota, you're obviously going to go with Garrison Keillor,
mm-hmm.
kind of a thing. And I think coming out of Chicago, and especially out of Chicago journalism, you pick up some chops, some really great writers down there, people like Mike Royko and a man named Nelson Algren. There's such a great writing tradition in Chicago. So I kind of have a foot in both camps. And admire both cultures for their different insights, things that they can help a writer to see and understand.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
It's good that you're able to see both.
I'm a lucky man that way.
There you go, right?
Very lucky.
Very lucky. So. I guess we'll see you tomorrow on the 21st over at the bookshelf, and I believe that's at 7 o'clock. Let me just
talk. I believe it is.
Yes. And there's wine involved, so why not stop down? There's really no reason not to.
It sounds like the ultimate enticement.
I know. I'm working on it.
Well, yeah, I am so looking forward to it. I love Winona. It's actually the first city I saw in Minnesota because I took a train Chicago. And it was an overnight train, and the sun came up at Winona. So that was my first squinting out the window and seeing Minnesota, and you couldn't find any place more beautiful.
It is gorgeous, isn't it?
It is. It's a wonderful place.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, I can't wait. I'll see you tomorrow night.
All right, see you then. Thanks again to Peter Smith for joining us on ArtBeat. More information on Peter can be found at petersmithwrites.blogspot.com. That's petersmithwrites.blogspot.com.
ArtBeat is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. Visit us on the web at kqal.org.